You are listening to Welcome to the Other Side, the podcast for parents navigating the turbulent waters of divorce and getting their footing in a new land. I'm your host, Meg Gluckman, certified coach and divorced mom of two kiddos, and I'm ready to share strategies for how you can move on from your divorce, how to co-parent without drama, and how to thrive in your post-divorce life. You are not alone on this journey. There's so much we can share together. Let's jump in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. I am excited today to have a guest on to talk about what we think of as the traditional way to navigate a divorce and what some of our new options are, especially here in Washington State. Though I always mention to folks that everything that we're doing in Washington might be available in your state as well, and it might just be called something a little bit different. So take what you learn here and do some Google searching, and you can find out what your options are in your state. So I am very pleased today to invite Cindy Wysocki on. Hi, Cindy. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Meg. I am happy to be here with you today.
So awesome. So Cindy's in Washington as well. She's a little south of where I am. And she is a collaborative family law and estate planning attorney who helps families plan for peace and stay out of court. And I love her website. I'll definitely link to it in the show notes. But the word peace is there in so many places. And I don't think people associate peace and divorce. So I love that you include it so much, Cindy.
Well, thank you. It is certainly central to what I do. And my experience in helping families through divorces is that those who have a peaceful process also end up with a situation that they can live with moving forward, and they don't have to keep revisiting the same issues. So for me, creating a peaceful way to dissolve a marriage or handle a family law matter is actually critical for families and ensuring their success after the family law matter is over.
I love that. Will you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in helping families?
Sure. I have been practicing law. This is my 19th year of practicing law. Most of what I've done has revolved around families. Right after I graduated from law school, I spent about 3 years as a public defender. And even when I was a public defender, I did family law. Contempt of court was what I did for a lot of that. And then after I left the public defenders, I opened my own practice, and my clients, they've always been families. So I do estate planning, which is wills, trusts, powers of attorney. And I also do family law, which is divorces, parenting plans, child supports, things like that.
And when most families come to you to navigate through divorce, what are they thinking that the process is going to look like?
I think a lot of people assume that they are going to dash into court. There's going to be a huge fight. The judge is going to tell them what to do. The judge is going to find justice for their family. I think that's the way people start out oftentimes.
And what's your actual experience? Is that what happens for most folks?
No. Though what I try to tell people is, first of all, the judge is not an expert in your family. What the judge really wants you to do is to try to figure out a way to work this out in a way that works for your family. Your family is special and unique. And while the judges, I find that they're very welcoming to our citizens. They understand that they're public servants and they're ready to serve the public. However, their preference is that take the time to try to work these things out themselves. What I tell families is, if you go into court and have that judge decide your life for you, because it really is your life, it's your money, it's your kids, it's the most important things in your life are what are at stake. So if you go in there and you have the judge decide, one, the judge is super busy. You're going to be one of who knows how many cases that judge is dealing with. Two, the judge is going to be a little bit irritated. The judge doesn't like to see you come in and be arguing with your spouse and looking to the judge to, a lot of times clients come in and they want the judge to punish their spouse, and they're sorely disappointed because the judges don't usually do that. What the judges do is they look at both of the spouses and they say, you're arguing, and this is what we do for people like you. We put this order in place. And the problem with that is people like you, that's a huge generalization. It's not special and customized to those individuals who are standing before the judge. When evidence is presented to the judge, we have to comport with the rules of evidence. The judge isn't going to have all of the information. Those litigants are going to have a lot more information than the judge. So what I tell families who come to me and they think that that's the way to resolve their divorce, I say, I don't recommend that. There are ways where you can have more control over the process. You resolve your issues in a way that are really going to serve your family over the long run. And you may have to make some compromises to do that. You usually will have to, but there are supportive ways where we can help you gather information and help you as the expert in your family come to resolutions that actually work for your own unique family. So yeah. I encourage families to look elsewhere. Don't look to the courts to solve your problem. Look to other ways because there are other better ways available.
Yeah. And you mentioned a client wanting to come in and have the judge punish the other parent. And I see that where clients want to be proven right, or that one party is good and one party is bad, right? One parent is the good parent, one parent is the bad parent, and kind of have some outside validation that their perspective, their struggle has been real, and you know they deserve more support, or they deserve whatever X, Y, and Z. And it seems to me that that's a really normal place to be, like emotionally a really normal place to be, that it's almost just part of the grieving process of ending this relationship, making this transition, that we feel out of control. We feel emotionally like this is out of control, this is happening to us. But what you're saying is, even though we have all those big feelings, and even we have all these thoughts about the other person, it still doesn't mean we should go to court to figure all of this out. Let's have space to process all of that stuff. Let's have space to get support on all those big feelings and issues, but let's still hold ownership or control over what gets decided.
Yes, yes. And I think what you're saying is exactly right. And I think that processing is best done privately. It's not something that should be brought into a public courtroom, have somebody just pour out all of their heart and soul and the intimate financial and personal details of their life into a public court record. And yet that is the court process. That's what's happened, is all this stuff comes out into the public court record. And rather than feeling validated, people often feel embarrassed. They feel shame. They feel the judge was mean to them. The feelings that come out by trying to use the court process to process all those emotions, they don't tend to be what the clients are looking for.
Yeah. I know we've talked, or you and I have talked about this before, about whether it's possible to win in court. So tell me your thoughts on that. Can you win a divorce case in court?
I have very, very strong feelings on this one. Absolutely not. You cannot win a divorce case. And it doesn't matter if you get everything you want in a particular motion. That doesn't mean that you've won. Because if the other person feels just as strongly that they should have won, but you won, they're going to keep fighting that. And I've seen cases that have been in constant litigation since 2014, I think is the longest one that I have. And that's probably the longest one I've had is since 2014.
So if we can't win in court,
yes,
what is the best that folks can hope for out of court?
I think that people can hope for is something that both parties are going to just follow, where they're going to kind of be resigned and say, okay, I'm just going to do this because I don't want to fight anymore. And that's not an op optimal outcome.
And we've been talking offline about you shifting your practice and doing less of this court battle stuff and more of kind of a different route. Do you want to tell us a little bit about like what is this different route that you're hoping more folks will take to go through their divorce and figure out their parenting plan and divide up assets and all of that?
I think an avenue that's available to people that people aren't as aware of as they could be is the collaborative model. And in a collaborative model, instead of having each spouse have a lawyer who essentially fights with each other, and they're very positional, everybody has a position, and they argue their position and they try to win, even though you can't actually win. In the collaborative model, the spouses each have a lawyer, but the lawyers are part of a professional team that work together to support the divorcing spouses so that they can make their own decisions, and also so that they have all of the information they need to make their own decisions. And within this model, what I found is that when people are making information-based decisions and they're working together to create an optimal outcome for their family, then that is an outcome that will actually stick. So over time, it works. Whereas in the court process, one of the things that has just become utterly exhausting for me is that talk about win. Well, somebody wins something and somebody else is so mad, they're going to fight forever to try to overcome that order. And within the litigation model, like I said, the judges will welcome you into their courtroom. They are public servants. They are there to serve you. So they will not send your spouse away when your spouse is trying for the 15th time to overturn a particular order. So I think the durability of the orders or the agreement that a couple reaches is just critical. And within the collaborative law model, there is a high probability that when people have agency, they buy into the agreement that they themselves created based on actual information, like real transparent information, that's going to stick. And so people actually are going to be able to walk into their new future and be hopeful. Whereas in the litigation model, too often I just do not see that happening. I see a revolving door of litigation where somebody is trying to win a game that you simply cannot win.
I'm imagining folks who have never been involved in a divorce, who have never gone to court, have never done anything really legal, like have never needed legal representation before for anything, thinking that, well, this collaborative model sounds interesting, but how do two lawyers actually really work together? Like, how really aren't lawyers trained to fight against each other, to argue, to try to win the biggest piece of the pie? How can they actually work together in this collaborative model?
Well, that is interesting. So I always say some of my favorite people in the world are lawyers, and some of the people I most despise are lawyers. So the idea that as lawyers we're trained to fight, some people may see it that way, but there are lawyers out there who are actually trained to collaborate, to problem solve, to create synergies. I love having an opposing counsel on a case who will work together with me, because what I find is that that person will come up with ideas that I never would on my own. And so that is actually optimal to have two lawyers who know what they're doing and they can put their heads together in support of a couple, and we can come up with all sorts of ideas to help people. So I think the idea that lawyers are trained to fight, sure, there's some out there you'll find that's what they believe. But I think there's a lot of us out there, we don't believe that at all. Even among the litigation crowd, there's a lot of us that hate litigation. We don't want to take our clients into court to fight. So we're really working hard to try to be creative and to problem solve and to keep people out of court. So I think a divorcing couple, my advice for them is find a pair of lawyers, one for each of you, who want to work together to help you. Because we can do that. That's something that I've done more often than not when it's available. It's not always available because if you get one of those fighters on the other side, yeah, they won't work with you. You can't force somebody to work with you.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question is, what if your spouse has already hired their lawyer? Then what?
That does happen. I have an anecdote. Actually, I've done this more than one time. I have had situations, even within the litigation model, where I have a client, my client really wants to work to resolve the case. The client feels a duty, a fiduciary duty, a duty to care for their spouse, even though they are splitting up. The spouse hires a lawyer who I know is going to blow up the case. And I've, on more than one occasion, I've said to my clients, could you speak to your spouse and see if maybe you could convince them to hire a different lawyer? Because I've worked with this other lawyer before. I know what's going to happen. You don't have a complicated case, but it's going to become really complicated if we continue down this route. And people, when I tell this story, they say, oh, that's not possible that the other spouse would trust you enough. Well, yeah, it is possible because on multiple occasions, my client has been able to convince the spouse to switch attorneys to someone who I can work with. And we can pretty quickly gather the information we need. Sometimes we have to go to mediation to resolve the case, but we're able to work it out.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I appreciate you sharing that because I think it's good to remind folks that even if they've spent money, like even if they've gone down the path a little ways with a lawyer, like it's always a fit issue. Is this a good fit for me? Is it a good fit for the vision that I have for my family going forward? Because we aren't just dividing up assets. We are, especially if we have kids, we are restructuring our family. And is
Yes.
this person going to help me really do that in a way that
Yes.
feels good going forward? And so, yeah, sometimes there's a little money lost if you have to test the fit and then it's not a good fit and you have to find someone else. But long term, that can be a really smart decision to move on.
Absolutely. And in the bigger picture, it will be a cost savings. One of the cases where the opposing attorney was really difficult. I actually had another case with this opposing attorney, and the costs on the case were going above $100,000, and it
Wow.
shouldn't have been. So, in terms of cost savings, sure, the spouse was a little ways in, but we ended up settling the case for much, much less money than it would have cost had we gone through this terrible litigious process where everything was hiding the ball and fighting and drama, because that stuff is really expensive.
So that's a really good point. So hiding the ball, I feel like that could be a legal term, right? But it's a really big difference between how we operate in collaborative versus in the litigious model. So can you give an example of what hiding the ball means between the two
Sure.
models?
Sure. So within the litigation model, you are not technically allowed to hide the ball. You are supposed to disclose the assets and information that's relevant to the divorce. However, the other side has to ask for them. They have to ask for them the right way. And sometimes litigants will even just sit and say, well, you're going to have to make the court compel me to respond to this. So that process is called discovery. It's interrogatories, requests for production, subpoenas. It can be really, really tedious and surprisingly expensive. I feel like that's the stage of the case where clients sometimes are like, really, it costs this much? And I always say, well, it doesn't have to, because they could just hand the stuff over. And that's what we see in the collaborative model, is rather than going through this onerous process of you have to ask me the question the right way, or I'm not going to give you my statements, you're just going to have to subpoena them, I can't get them. We have an agreement that we're going to exchange all of the information that is relevant to the divorce, and we're going to do this openly, completely, And freely, and when I say freely, that is a it has a double meaning. Free as in we don't have to pay all this money to compel this stuff out of you, and free as well as yes, you ask me for it, I'm going to give it to you. And so the gathering of information is extremely important in both litigation and in collaborative law, and it's really the information that should drive the settlement. So if you have a situation where it's hard to even get the information, it also makes it hard to resolve the case. But having that free flow of information, it's a huge cost savings and it also promotes settlement.
And just for the lay folks out there, I'll just name some of that information and you can correct me or add on. It might be information about financial savings, investments, valuation of businesses, or retirement accounts, or extra properties, or like those kind of things. And just having that information and regular income, what's on your W-2, that kind of stuff, free flowing sharing of that kind of information.
Yes, absolutely. And it's not uncommon for clients to come to me and say, I have no idea what the assets are. I have no idea how much money my spouse makes. And if you're in that situation, you have the free flow of information, it's not a problem. If you're in that situation, you have someone who's trying to obscure things, then suddenly it's like detective work and it becomes very painstaking, difficult, and expensive.
Time consuming. I mean,
Oh,
that's the
yes.
other thing is how long do we want to be in this process? If we are freely sharing things, if we are coming into a room and we're working through things together with support of our attorneys and maybe a financial neutral or a divorce coach in there too, supporting the whole team, we're going to keep moving forward.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And discovery, which is the process of getting this information, is definitely a reason why trial gate dates get continued because we're just not getting the information. So that's definitely an advantage of the collaborative process is to get that information easily.
Is there any example of a situation that you would say, no, let's not even attempt with the collaborative? Like, this is a situation we should definitely just go the court route.
Yes. A situation where somebody has a significant problem, whether it's mental health, substance abuse, or domestic violence, and they have no awareness of it. They either deny it, they have no awareness of how it affects other people, or a situation maybe where the domestic violence actually creates a danger to you cannot be in the same space as this person because they are dangerous. So in those situations, the collaborative model is not going to be a good fit.
And I just want to emphasize that's a high bar. So if
Oh, yes.
you are in a relationship where those issues are not at play, what
Yes.
I'm hearing there is it's worth trying collaborative.
Absolutely. And even some cases with mental health, I've had plenty of clients, opposing parties who have mental health issues. If they know they have a mental health issue and they're under the care of a doctor, that's not a problem. And even some of the domestic violence stuff, there are situations where people are self-aware. They know, yes, I have this problem. I've done this thing, and they start diving into why am I like this and untangling it and really addressing their own issues, that is a person who can still work in the collaborative law process. I mean, we're talking about someone who just has no awareness and they have a serious problem. That's not something that's going to work well in a collaborative law process.
And just to stay on that for 1 minute more, if someone does have an awareness, and I have heard many examples of this, especially around substance abuse, if someone does have an awareness, part of the collaborative process, especially specifically when you're dealing with kids and a parenting plan in there too, is to develop a plan that takes that into consideration. That there is actually an action plan. This is how we're going to keep everybody safe. Here's the measurements. Here's what happens if somebody, doesn't comply with them. So it's not that you're going through the collaborative process and just pretending that everything's taken care of. No, Like, we're actually going to address it, but we're going to make a plan that's, like you said at the very top, that's very specific to the people and the situations that are here in the room. It isn't just some cookie cutter from a judge about how this should work.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And I think another point that's really important is in the collaborative law process, people's privacy and dignity can be protected in a way that it isn't going to be in the litigation process. If, you know, someone has a serious mental health issue, say they have bipolar disorder, you go through the litigation process and that is all over the court records. It's said in open court and it's really not fair to the person who has that condition. They don't need to have people be able to look up court records or just come to a hearing and get all this private information. So the collaborative law process offers a way where people can deal with serious issues and yet maintain privacy and dignity.
And just to get very specific on that, Cindy, is it because the clients can come up with their plan and then it can actually be filed as a sealed document instead of being a public record?
Yes, I've
Yeah.
definitely had cases where plans are they're either filed as a sealed document or sometimes they're not filed. Sometimes we do a thing which says confidential, not to be filed except under seal and for enforcement purposes only. And I've had a number of clients, some clients with high profile jobs who have chosen that route, and they've been able to manage the issues that way privately and without public attention coming on to
Yeah, that's a whole nother group of people that we
that.
haven't even thought about and talked about. If you had a client come to you and they want to hire you, they want to try this collaborative piece, how do you tell them to explain it to the other party so that they can go out and, find their collaborative representation?
I would tell them to tell their spouse that they would like to work cooperatively to resolve the case out of court. The spouse should look for a lawyer who is collaboratively trained. And there's a number of things they could tell their spouse. They could say, again, privacy is a big thing. You can handle your divorce in a private way, customized. Oftentimes I get clients who are from other countries who their cultural backgrounds are such that I don't want them going through the court because I just feel like their cookie cutter stuff that you get through the court is just not going to serve these people well. So someone could say to a spouse, whether it's a cultural thing or maybe they're just a really unique family. In that case, they might say like, hey, we could do this in a way that is customized to us, that's going to work for us, and we can do it by staying out of court. So that would be another thing. Cost is another thing. Once you get into that court process, again, with that cycle of litigation, it can just get amazingly expensive. So a spouse could say, I want to preserve our resources as much as I can. As we can, and I want to hire professionals who can support us in that and help us get information as easily as possible so that we can resolve our divorce without too much drama.
That's so awesome. I'm going to listen back to exactly everything you just said, and I'm going to make a little script and I'm going to share it with you all. I'll put it in the show notes so that, like, it's like the five bullets of why we should try this first. I think that's also one thing that you can add, which is like, let's try this first. You can
Yes.
always escalate things. You might end up needing different lawyers, and we can talk about why that is, but it's easier to escalate to more litigious or more court involvement than to de-escalate.
Yes, absolutely. Especially once that spouse puts that embarrassing, not true thing into the public court record. Which you see in litigation, it's very hard to recover from that emotionally, psychologically. But within the collaborative law process, I totally agree. It's at least worth giving it a try. And I do want to say I've had a couple of cases fall out of the collaborative law process and then come to me within the litigation context. And those cases have all settled. Those cases have not had to go to court. What happened was within the collaborative law process, they resolved a lot, but there's just this one thing, and they could not get past it. And so finally, the process had to end. When they got to the litigation attorneys, they still had that fundamental desire to resolve this. They just didn't know how to do it. Well, they got two new attorneys, new ideas, and my cases like that who've dropped out of the collaborative law process actually haven't had to use the court once it got into the litigation process because so much work had already been done and accomplished.
I love that. That's just one of those points that I want to like hammer home. I want to emphasize to folks that it's not an all or nothing. I've described in other episodes, starting all the way at the kitchen table approach, where you and your spouse are sitting across the table and you're figuring out some things. Like you can start there and figure out a couple things, and then you can move up and get more support in this collaborative model, and you can figure out a whole lot more. And then if there's still one or two things that you can't figure out, then you can go on. But it sets you up to have so many more agreements that are really what you feel good about, what you want, that are your choice, than starting all the way at the litigious end of the scale.
Yes, and then even if you have to enter the litigation, you already have so much more information. That's the other thing, because getting information within the litigation context can be really expensive.
Oh, so good. Oh, Cindy, we could talk about this on and on and on. I hope that if any of you who are listening are interested in learning more about collaborative or just all your options for divorce that and you're in Washington State, that you can reach out to Cindy. Cindy, what's the best place for folks to learn about you more and your practice?
Well, I have a website. It's www.wysockilaw.com, and there's quite a bit of information on there. That would probably be the best place to start.
And I know that you offer folks a consult call to kind of vibe check and see if you would be a good fit
Yeah,
as well.
absolutely. Absolutely. And I am actually pretty particular about the clients that I work with because I want a particular type of client. I want a client who wants to resolve their divorce. They want peace. People who want to burn down the house probably need to go somewhere else.
And like I said at the beginning, if you go check out her website, you'll see how much she talks about peace. Thank you so much, Cindy, for coming on and for sharing all your knowledge and wisdom and insights around the divorce process. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Meg. Yes, it's been totally fun to talk with
Good.
you.
All right, y'all. That's what we have for you this week, and we will catch you next time. Bye now. Hey, friends. Hope you enjoyed that episode. For extra support with divorce or co-parenting, swing by my website, meggluckman.com. There you can grab your free PDF of 5 questions to prep for any divorce or co-parenting meeting. And you can also check out my Fearless Co-parenting class for loads of practical tips. If you're craving more personalized guidance, explore one-on-one coaching. I'd love to support you to make your divorce or co-parenting journey smoother and a whole lot less stressful. Whether it's just one coaching session to help you prepare for a co-parenting meeting, or whether we work together through your entire divorce process, you deserve support as you navigate these important and challenging times. Check out my free resources and learn more about coaching at my website, megluckman.com. Thanks, y'all.